Hi, Sam.
Hi, ohayou gozaimasu.
Ohayou gozaimasu. We are very nice Japanese. Hi, and this is the DevOps interview. Yay!
Yes.
Yes. So, and Sam, would you introduce yourself to you Japanese and your fans?
Sure. Please. So, I'm Sam Guckenheimer. I'm from Microsoft. I've been with Microsoft since 2003. I am now in Visual Studio Cloud Services. We provide Visual Studio Online, which is our software as a service for the DevOps and ALM lifecycle, as well as Team Foundation Server, which continues to be our on-premise solution for managing the lifecycle across really all technologies, whether you're using .NET with Visual Studio, or Java with Eclipse, or IntelliJ, or native development. And this works with mobile development from Xcode, Android, whatever, for all your technologies as the hub of the life cycle. So that's what I work on these days. Mm-hmm. And I'm here at DevOps Enterprise.
Yeah, me as well.
talking about the journey we've made from being a provider just of on-premise software to software as a service that's delivered from the cloud for customers.
Yeah, it was very nice. I reread your articles
in
Microsoft. And about the journey to the DevOps of yours.
Yeah,
it was fantastic, actually.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to ask you about your journey of the DevOps in your development. Okay.
Yeah, well, you know, we started around 2010.
Mm-hmm.
We'd been very successful in providing software that our customers installed on premise. And we knew we needed to become a provider of software as a service from the cloud. It really only took a few months to take what we had as the box product and host it in the cloud, but it's taken years to become a true service. So we've had to learn a lot of things as we've scaled. We have now over 3 million registered developers in Visual Studio Online. We've, along the way, learned what we call the 7 habits of effective DevOps. 3 of these you can think of as continuing from Agile. The way we do teaming and scheduling. So we work in small autonomous feature crews or scrum teams. We schedule in sprints. We have a common backlog where they pull items from, and they work to a common definition of done, which in this case is at the end of the sprint, you deploy live in the production service. So the it's really clear what it means to be done. Your software is ready to be used live in production by real customers. Second, we manage technical debt very stringently. So there are very clear rules that prevent debt from creeping into the project. We do not allow you to work on anything new if you have bugs that are accumulating during the project. We do not allow any sort of work that is related to live-side performance to get neglected. That has to be taken care of at root cause. We do not allow any infrastructure drift and so forth. All rigorously sprint to sprint. Third, carrying forward from Agile, is the focus on the flow of customer value. So you had this notion in Agile of the customer is the authority, and you do what the customer wants. But in Agile, you depended on a product owner to interpret what the customer wanted. With DevOps, you have the benefit of being able to use telemetry to observe what customers are actually using. So you can get real evidence on what customers are doing, and you can see what they're using, and you can complement that, of course, with reaching out to them and engaging with them. So you build this rounded picture of what's working, what's not working. And this focus on the things that are working is backed up by the measurement of what really does work. So those are three practices that I think of as the second decade of Agile. Then with DevOps, there's some new ones. That product backlog that we have is no longer a set of requirements. I mean, they're written as user stories, of course. You know, as a developer, I need to be able to, you know, spin up my builds for all parts of my system and, you know, get the results in this thing and do continuous integration and continuous deployment and so forth. That's a user story. However, we, in the product backlog, think of our entries as hypotheses. So this is sometimes called hypothesis-driven development. It's also called build, measure, learn by Eric Ries. Yeah. So we start by saying, I have an idea as hypothesis that I need to then turn into an experiment, and that experiment will be instrumented so that I can collect evidence in production that will substantiate or diminish the hypothesis. And based on that evidence, the results of the experiment, I will make the decision about the next thing to do. Mm-hmm. So the hypothesis-driven backlog is really a new practice that has come in with DevOps. That's possible because of the fifth thing, which is the idea that you gather evidence in production. You do this with telemetry. You do this by instrumenting everything. You collect data for what customers are using. You collect data for live site health. You collect data for performance. You collect data proactively for troubleshooting. You collect as much as you can, and you correlate, and you understand from that. Now that supports number six, which we call lifecycle culture. This is a term that our CEO, Satya Nadella, started. He started this several years ago when he was in Bing, and then brought it to cloud and enterprise, and now has spread it through all of Microsoft. Lifecycle culture means the status of the lifecycle is always your first priority. You always keep it up. If there is a lifecycle incident, as we call it, you swarm the problem and you remediate immediately, you communicate immediately. The developer gets on the incident. So for example, if there is a lifecycle incident, an LSI during working hours, the developer needs to be on the bridge working the problem within 5 minutes. Outside of working hours, say at midnight, 2 a.m., whatever, it's 15 minutes. That's a you build it, you run it philosophy. And you fix the problem immediately in terms of remediation, but you also do a retrospective on the problem and you use the five whys technique, you know, This comes out of Toyota, you understand what could have gone wrong if, for example, this was caused by a memory leak or resource consumption. You ask, well, why didn't we have instrumentation for that? Why did we allow software out that could consume resources like that? Why didn't we catch this in pre-production? Why isn't there static analysis in place? And so on, you keep going backwards. And the root cause repair items have to be fixed within a sprint or maximum two sprints so that you can prevent this and similar problems from recurring again. And if the incident has affected customers, we do a public retrospective and post it so that customers can hold us accountable for that. It's all part of life site culture, which is the sixth habit. And then the seventh is that we use infrastructure as a flexible resource. So this includes common ideas like, you know, treat servers as cattle, not pets, as they say here. In other words, use what you as much as you need and then shut it down. It allows us to do things like go big load testing as part of the release pipeline. So we have cloud load testing that will simulate large user load before we go big. It allows us to do canary testing, where we have an Azure Scale unit that we work on that's fully instrumented before we roll out to subsequent rings where customers are connected. We're now in 8 data centers, but the automated deployment always goes first through our canary. So we see with production traffic what's happening, and that's the one we're connected to. And we always deploy at peak load times, so we see how the behavior is with maximum traffic, and we control exposure so that we will ratchet up the amount of load from real production that is going to the new release and observe the behavior as more traffic comes to it. And we'll use feature flags to experiment with new functionality so we can learn from usage during experimentation and allow those users to opt in who say, hey, I want to try this and work with you and come in early. And we learn from their wishes and their feedback to us and observing their usage under private preview behind feature flags before we go to a public preview and then go out to GA. So those are our seven habits. The scheduling and teams, the management of technical debt, the focus on the flow of customer value, the hypothesis-driven backlog, the gathering of evidence and production, lifecycle culture, and managing infrastructure as a flexible resource.
Yeah, I really love your seven habits, actually. Yeah, a lot of people love it. I'd like to ask you another question related to the DevOps journey, right? And what is the biggest challenge of your team to transit into the DevOps? And what was the solution?
Well, I think there are a few challenges. I think you can look at this from culture or technology. The cultural challenge is that people are not used to thinking of themselves as working in this multidisciplinary world where you're running live service that's always on, you're deploying all the time, and you have no room to say, oh, I'm going to go off for a period and, you know, after 3 months I'll bring my work back. We're always working in or very close to the master branch of code. We always deploy, even if we guard with feature flags. We, for example, did have in our HR system said, no, everyone's an engineer, not these people are on a developer career path and these people are on a tester career path. They're all on an engineering career path. They may do different specializations, but we don't create silos of how they think about their development. We try to pull everyone together, and we try to break down all of those walls. The culturally, that works well for many people. For some, it requires changes of habits and has been a learning. I would say most people are in our company are very much embracing the idea of developing mobile first, cloud first. Technically, there are a lot of learnings, so you need to have great telemetry, you need to have great practices around the release pipeline so that you have full automation and you have fantastic automated testing and you can flow changes through seamlessly, and you know, you really shift your thinking from the old way in a box product of reducing mean time between failures. So if you say you're making a product like a power plant or power generator, your thinking is I minimize mean time between failure because I'm installing something that's going to sit in place and I don't want to send a service engineer. You change that to thinking about minimizing mean time to repair because you want to be able to constantly deploy and fix if something needs to be fixed. So it's not a matter of so much saying this will never fail as saying if it does fail, I make the consequence very small because I can remediate instantly. And that is both a technology shift and a mindset shift that is very different for people as a way of working. And that has taken some time. A good example, and there's a good retrospective on this, is the from Visual Studio Online is our launch in 2013 when we said the service is now public. We actually at that time did not have a Canary instance, and we let our marketing team follow the old practice of saying, oh no, you cannot lift the feature flags on anything new until we make the public announcement. And we followed those rules and we lifted the feature flags, and there was all of this new production code exposed at high scale. We at that time were only in one scale unit in one data center in Chicago, and we promptly had a huge outage, about 9 hours that day, and then subsequent ripples through the next few days. And it was a, technically there were many things. The primary issue was network address table exhaustion. It was a form of congestion failure, similar to what the internet experienced in the 80s with network address failure. If you, again, think in a five whys sense, there is a much bigger process failure behind that, which is that we had not had a canary, had not lifted the flags before exposing all the new traffic, had not had the production level load testing in place prior to the public announce, did not have exposure control mechanisms in place at the time of launch. And so the big process change we did was to move all of this live site work ahead of feature work and really change our backlog so we could mature our live site practices, including going to multiple data centers so we could have a canary.
So what is the next step for you about DevOps journey?
Well, we are continuing to expand the parts of the DevOps lifecycle that we're covering with our services. So we have, for example, had in preview application insights for monitoring. We have Haki app for mobile development lifecycle and monitoring on Apple iOS and Android. We will be pushing the capabilities on these. We are adding capabilities in the release pipeline. We'll be announcing much of this at Connect in November. We'll be continuing to connect this whole experience for you. And we've been working on the what we call the ecosystem, that is the partner community, where we have extensibility in Visual Studio Online and now TFS 2015 that allows you to take whatever your favorite tools are and continue using them, and through REST interfaces and service hooks and OAuth, they continue to work as part of your whole system. So it's no longer all or nothing. They all work together.
Cool, very nice.
Hi, thank you very much about the interview.
Yeah,
yeah,
great.
It is very deep and very informative, I think.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So, and I have one request from the Japanese fan of you, actually.
Yeah.
This guy is actually Rakuten guy.
Yeah.
He's running and try to adapt the Azure and DevOps in the Rakuten company. It is very famous company in Japan.
Yeah.
And he's one of the best Agile and DevOps practitioner in Japan.
Yeah.
He's Mr. Kawaguchi.
Yeah.
And Mr. Kawaguchi and is actually inspired by you. Your presentation in Agile 2014.
Ah, right, yes.
Yeah, yeah, keynote, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And actually, and that is why he started a DevOps journey in the Rakuten.
Uh-huh.
You know, this is
that's
your
fantastic.
Influencer, right?
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, yeah. So he said, I really much appreciate for you. And
Oh, yeah. Well, that's great news.
Yeah,
I love that.
Great news. And he also leading a lot of the community of the Agile in Japan.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest community is next one is Scrum Gathering.
Yeah.
And he said, would you want to come or something?
For a Scrum Gathering in Japan, sure.
Yes.
We could arrange that.
And this is going to happen at around 18th January to the 19th January.
probably, I think
probably.
So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And this will be over 300 people.
Yeah.
And you will be stand in front of all of them, maybe.
Yeah, I have to check my
calendar. Of course. Yeah, this is sudden request, right?
Yeah.
But actually, when I upload your picture with you, then a lot of people like, this is Sam, like that. You're very popular in Japan. So please come to Japan if you have a chance.
Okay.
So thank you very much.
Okay, thanks. Thanks. Okay, great. Thank you very much. Bye.